Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Well, we know this is the Morning Answer where it's supposed to be, Amy Jacobson and Dan Proft, but I have had my eye on this show for a long time, if you've listened. My name is Sean Thompson. Dan Proft has nicknamed me Sean from Elmwood Park, which is true, and I have decided to take the studio over. I refuse to turn it over to arguments of phony growth instead of recognizing the Keynesian soiree Ponzi scheme. But this is more about it was like the opening of Godfather 4 yesterday. I'm sorry. I'm not a never-Trumper, even though I've been accused of it. I like Donald Trump. I was happy he beat the Duchess of Chaffington. I was excited. I was looking up, forward to some changes, some fundamental changes. I couldn't stand what was going on in the Middle East. So I was more disappointed as I saw over this year and a half him do or not do things I had hoped he would do. And instead, I wanted to focus on the things that I had watched him do and didn't like. But I never was a part of this chaotic government coup d'etat, for lack of a better word, where it was evident that the FBI had revealed itself to be Democrat apparatchiks as the upper echelon just threw everything they could at Trump. And I also noticed if you're going to have a guy who's going to be a fixer, you want Ray Donovan. You do not want Michael Cohen because he will fold. And I never liked the idea that he hired Lanny Davis, the Clinton's bagman, as an attorney. Now, I'm only kidding about seizing the show. Dan Proft, if you know anything about Dan Proft, there's a couple things you need to know. He is reckless driver of a German well-made machine that's never been washed. And he obviously took the wrong route this morning. And he sent a text message to me that says, I'm running late. I'm cutting it close. Like we work at a Dairy Queen where I can have Alice continue to fill in his shift. That's not how it works. So instead, what I've done is I've kept Mike Scott on the microphone. Because, Mike, I want to go over some of these news stories.
Okay.
And I'll tell you the truth. I mean, it was truly like Godfather 4 yesterday. If it was Michael Cohen, it was Manafort.
Sure. Fire away.
Now, originally, Manafort, who I've had my eye on for 40 years, right? I never liked the fact that him and Roger Stone and Black were part of that torturers lobby in the 70s. These guys go back to Nixon. And I never understood if you're going to come out, and the nice thing about Donald Trump's announcement was it was a refreshing turn to the standard Republicans we had that whether it was Bush's brother who thought he had a shot at it, whether it was a sugar subsidy Marco Rubio, whether it was these Republicans who we were all kind of sick and tired of. Now, I chose, obviously, Ted Cruz out of the bunch. But when Donald Trump started to look like he was going to win, I was kind of excited about it. All right. I also was excited about watching the Democrats lose their mind over the prospect that Donald Trump was going to be president. I enjoyed election night as much as the most hardened Trump Krishna, right? Aside from me having that Caddyshack hat, I was excited about it. Immediately recognized it was from that night that the goal of the Democrat Party was to impeach Donald Trump. They had already had that scenario in their mind. They just needed a way to connect it. Lucky for them, they were already steeped in a scandal that they felt they could put on Donald Trump's back. This is me speculating on it. So what I noticed was they were going to adjust whatever their case was to that crime. Well, look who's here. All right.
Land the plane, Junior. Do you see the F-15s? Yeah. All right. We'll be right back. Talk more about Michael Cohen with the adults in the room now.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy this morning. All right, so let's talk about the fixer and answer the question whether or not he neutered
Trump's presidency. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Here were the federal prosecutors gloating after Michael Cohen entered his guilty plea on 8 various counts of skullduggery and illegality.
Today, as you heard, Michael Cohen pled guilty to 8 felony charges. 5 of those dealt with tax evasion for the years 2012 through 2016, in which he failed to report approximately $4.1 million in reported income. Approximately 2.5 of that money was from interest payments from a personal loan that he failed to report. Approximately $1.3 million of that money was from the operation of his taxi medallion business. Approximately $100,000 of that money was from brokerage commissions, and over $200,000 was from consulting fees.
A lot of moving parts.
That's over $4.3 million over a 5-year period, which translates into a loss to the United States Treasury of approximately $1.3 million. In addition, in count 6, Mr. Cohen pled guilty to making false statements to a financial institution in connection with an application for a home equity line of credit. That application, he failed to disclose more than $14 million in debt that he had. And
not
as a result of
here.
That concealment, he obtained that $500,000 line of credit, which he would not have been entitled to had he been candid and honest.
And then the
in
big
addition,
ones.
Mr. Cohen pled guilty to 2 campaign finance charges, 1 for causing an unlawful corporate contribution, and a 2nd one for personally making an excessive personal contribution, both for the purpose of influencing the 2016 election. In addition, what he did was he worked to pay money to silence 2 women who had information that he believed would be detrimental to the 2016 campaign and to the candidate and the campaign.
And there's the big ones, the last two, the campaign finance violations, crimes, and that Cohen pled guilty to. And Cohen went on during his elocution to say that he did it at the direction of a particular federal candidate. See if you can connect those dots. Donald Trump on a plane with the press corps out to his, I don't know if it was to or from his rally in West Virginia yesterday. Trump had this to say in response to the Cohen guilty pleas.
Do you know about the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels?
So it's a little difficult to hear, but he basically, did you know about the payments? He reiterated he didn't know about the payments and so didn't authorize them, obviously, and just essentially said, you'll have to ask Michael about that.
This is going to backfire, though. I'm going to tell you right now. I really do believe that. See, here's the benefit I have that you don't. I live with the Trump Krishna. My wife was a union Democrat her whole life. She's a big Trump fan, big
okay.
Trump.
All right.
So I'm there when this comes out, and I watch her reaction. And this is going to just dig the trench deeper.
What do you mean? What was her reaction?
Her reaction is, this is nonsense. They threw everything they could at him, and they were going to get him. Because what you have is a year and a half of evidence that the upper echelon of the FBI, from the incredible Mr. Limpid, what's his name, Rosenstein, the incestuous,
right.
Despicable between Comey and Mueller, and then the guy that cheated on his wife with the incredible Mr. Ed, Strzok, and his lovely mistress who were working, and the text messages. And all you have is the Republicans who love Trump are going to say, I don't care about any of this. This is nonsense. And what will happen is, and rightfully so, because Cohen is a scumbag. Cohen is a scumbag.
Well, and also
so they're going to cut him loose.
And also, too, to your point, the FBI, the Department of Justice, to some extent the CIA, because of Brennan, have completely undermined the public's confidence in them through their public antics, as well as private antics that have become public. I mean, again, you go through the half a dozen members of the senior leadership of the FBI under Jim Comey who are all gone and dismissed or left in disgrace. It does tend to water down the public's belief in your integrity, no matter how many times you contend that you are a person or an organization that is honest and forthright and for truth, justice in the American way.
You had a guest on earlier. I don't think I was doing the show, and it was about the coming Civil War. All this does is get us closer to his prediction than it does a cohesive political debate in this country. This is all this does. And here's the problem. Lanny Davis is the real cherry on the Democrat scheme Sunday. Lanny Davis is not a good lawyer. I think that's safe to say. For 30 years, he's a bag man. That's all he is. He's an out front bag man. So why would you hire this incompetent boob to be your attorney?
Birds of a feather. I mean, Cohen and Lanny Davis.
So it goes more towards the conspiracy of this was always the plan.
Jeff in Dundee, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Sean, Dan. Say, listen, this all is fruit of, this all came about because Jeff Sessions recused himself. I think Jeff Sessions needs to be fired. And put a military man in there as attorney general, somebody with some knowledge and some integrity. If it was the Democrats that were in charge, they would have never recused themselves. They would have stuck their feet in the mud, and they would have never cooperated whatsoever.
Jeff Sessions
has to leave.
We got enough military.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Well, I mean, the president has discretion to ask for Jeff Sessions' resignation, and if he did, Jeff Sessions would give it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the kind of blaming Jeff Sessions at some point becomes a little hollow for me. Tony on the South Side, the man who coined the term Tangerine Jesus.
Oh, really?
Yes. Good morning. Yeah, good morning, Danny. Good morning, Elmwood. Listen up.
Elmwood.
This is my thing here. I got a question for Sean, too, real quick. First of all, I'm going to buttress his point. I'm a right-leaning libertarian in Illinois. I don't care what happens with Cohen and the rest of these knuckleheads. I'm still going to support Trump, even though, you know, he wasn't my first choice. Anyway, real quick for Sean, is the red tide going to affect the property, the golf front property down in Naples? One. Two, do you carry Venture cigars over at that little shop you got up there in Elmwood Park?
You come in, I carry better cigars than that, but we'll get you a Hoyo de Monterey.
What about the red tide?
The red tide, ironically, I can tie the red tide to Rubio's sugar subsidies. Did you see the article?
Of course you can. I did. Absolutely, yes.
It'll go away, and you're going to want to live in Naples, red tide or not, because we've got the chubby tide coming in called J.B. Pritzker, and that's not going away.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Tony. Appreciate it. Greg in Schaumburg.
Okay, I guess I'm the guy that is a little bit more cautious. Good morning, Sean. It's a pleasure to finally speak with you.
You too.
First question, Dan, playing lawyer, and Sean, you can too on the radio.
Yeah, why not?
If they can tie the $130,000 in the 2016 period right before the election, and can they make the case of a violation of campaign laws, knowing that, here's my second point, that Mueller, it was in the DNA of this whole thing that they were going to come up with a big charge in 3 weeks before the election. Tie those two together, and there's the House, and that's the strategy. Can they do that with the 130?
Thanks for the call, Greg. They can. And certainly politically. I mean, look, here's the thing that Trump has going for him is Michael Cohen's credibility. So this becomes, unless you have some evidence, like, I don't know, recording, we're talking about Michael Cohen, that you were directed by President Trump. It's Michael Cohen's word versus the president's word. You know how long FEC adjudication takes?
You know how long FEC cases take?
So the $130,000, first of all, in the grand scheme of FEC violations, it's not exactly the biggest. I mean, Barack Obama paid a $375,000 FEC fine for purposely misleading the FEC in terms of disclosure of donors and the like. $375,000 fine. That's with, and we're talking about millions of dollars with respect to Obama. So, number one, it's a relatively minor infraction in the grand scheme of things, even though it's going to be treated as Watergate, as it already has been. But can they tie it for the purposes of impeachment? Can they tie it to say, for the purposes of the court of public opinion, which is what impeachment is, right? You know he had an affair with Stormy Daniels and this other woman. You know that Michael Cohen, look at Michael Cohen. Could he come up with a scheme by himself? Of course not. Of course he was directed to do it. And if people believe that and popular opinion sways against President Trump, then he's incredibly vulnerable politically. Legally, not really. I don't see a lot of exposure there.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy this morning, and of course the left is making the Watergate comparisons and bringing on former Watergate prosecutors like Nick Ackerman to make those Watergate comparisons.
This makes the President of the United States an unindicted co-conspirator. This is the first time this has happened since Richard Nixon was named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Watergate trial. Yeah. This is a big
deal. I will say, I don't tend to disagree with you much, but you are actually wrong, because Rudy Giuliani has just released a statement that counters exactly what you're saying. It says there is no allegation of any wrongdoing against the president in the government's charges against Michael Cohen. It is clear that, as the prosecutor noted, Mr. Cohen's actions reflect a pattern of lies and dishonesty over a significant period of time. I don't know if you expected a different statement from Rudy Giuliani.
Not at all. This is the exact same kind of nonsense that Rudy Giuliani has been putting out for months. The fact of the matter is, if you read this indictment, he's doing it at the direction of Donald Trump. I mean, if he's doing it at the direction of Donald Trump, there's a conspiracy. It's an agreement to commit campaign financing crimes. It's a five-year felony. This is a serious matter.
Prof, is there a political RICO Act that I'm unaware of?
What do you mean political?
I mean, what he's doing is
campaign finance law.
Well, what he's doing is, there's so many assumptions here. If this commentator is right, where is Donald Trump's name mentioned in the complaint?
Well, no, he's not. And where he's wrong, Rudy Giuliani was technically right in the government's indictment, but in the allocution, Cohen implicates the president. That's fairly clear. And so you do have federal law. You have federal campaign finance law. If Michael Cohen is telling the truth, then you would have President Trump involved in a conspiracy to violate campaign finance law. That is true. There's all kinds of, as I mentioned before, legal remedies for violations of campaign finance laws. If you're perhaps a favored son, like Barack Obama, you get a big fine. If you're not a favored son, like Dinesh D'Souza, you get away for a year. You get prosecuted and you get home confinement.
Well, he went to that halfway house where it was not fun. I read his book. It was shocking. So now here's the thing, Prof.
So there's two things, though. There's the legal issues, and there are real legal issues here. And then there are the political issues and the impact on his presidency politically. And those are real, too. So there's sort of two buckets of issues the way I see it.
I think there's also maybe possibly a third. And this is what I mean. You hung around with guys named Montesquieu and Chip, and they had Roman numerals after their name.
Yes, of course.
Northwestern.
Right. I was part of the French part of Wheaton.
This is not my experiment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm bars and scars. Growing up playing cards with guys that had, stab you rather than look at you. And there's such a thing as overplaying a really good hand.
Mm-hmm.
You can overplay a full house with all the confidence in the world. And you take your eye off the fact that that little scumbag in the corner has got four twos in his hand. And he's going to beat you every time.
Right.
And the reality of what's going to happen here is this is going to shore up guys who would have sat out. This is going to shore up.
You think this is going to galvanize Trump supporters?
I think this really is, and I think they're going to hold their nose and vote for Republicans to avoid this kind of selective prosecution.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's the interesting thing about that. If the case is going to be made, and it had been made previously by Giuliani and others, that the midterms were a referendum on Trump's impeachment, because if the Democrats take the House, they're going to move on impeachment. That is more real than it's ever been after yesterday.
Absolutely.
And so how that referendum question shakes out, or if the Republicans, as you suggest, if the Democrats are overplaying their hand, do they want to make that the referendum question to galvanize Trump supporters to say, you better come out and vote, and you better come and vote for every one of those Republican candidates in the House and the Senate that are in competitive races because my presidency is on the line.
That's exactly what's going to happen. No question about it.
Bruno in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. So, you know, I voted for Trump knowing fully well he was vulgar, inarticulate, boastful, that he was an adulterer because of two issues, immigration and trade. And I knew that he was the only one of the people in the Republican field that wasn't bought and paid for by the establishment special interest. So I don't care that he did a porn star or two porn stars and that he paid that person either directly or through an intermediary money to shut up. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I see this as a coup. I see this as a palace coup. And when you compare it to what Hillary Clinton did and got away with, this is nothing.
That's what Bruno's the perfect example.
Thanks for the call, Bruno.
Not only is he not interested in the worst porno ever shot, he doesn't care about the issues. To him, it's you know, this is the other thing. This is why they don't care about the actual, the true economy or the true Obamacare or the military 17-year war that we don't talk about anymore. It is now down to, look, you're worse than us. That's all it is.
Well, that's the I think it's been that way for a bit. I think it's been accentuated, if you will, by Trump, the negative partisanship. I'm not a Republican, but I despise the Democrats more than I do the Republicans. I'm not a Democrat, but I despise the Republicans more than I do the Democrats. That's the negative partisanship sort of base play. Jim in Rogers Park, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, you guys. When I listened to the press conference yesterday and the guy says that Cohen spent $130,000 trying to influence the outcome of the election, to me, it looks like he spent $130,000 trying to stop someone from influencing the outcome of the election with a publicity stunt days before the election.
Yeah. Well, that's a campaign related expense. That's trying to influence the election. That's an election expense. And if it's an election expense, then it requires disclosure. Somebody is going to interfere, or somebody's going to try and impact the election, so I'm going to try and stop them from impacting the election. We're all talking about the election, so this is all in the political realm. It requires disclosure. That's the issue, Jim. Thanks for the call.
And did you ever hear a Democrat talk about George Soros? That's how they feel. So what? He moved $18 billion into the largest political payoff fund ever. He's just trying to do the right thing. So this is the problem you have.
Well, because
you've got a corrupted society.
Right, and we're in the era of the what about them?
Yeah,
we're in the yeah, but what about the Clintons? Yeah, but what about Soros?
Bingo.
Right, so yeah, my guy may have committed a transgression, but they've committed transgressions too, and their transgressions are even worse. So why should I participate in taking my guy out when those guys never get held accountable? And frankly, to some extent, I understand that mentality.
Two pirates in a knife fight. You root for the one that isn't the ugliest.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm not sure how that's applicable, but it's an interesting metaphor. Yeah. Tom in Deer Park.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Dan, I'm kind of going along with what you just said, and I'm just going far and wide spitballing here, but the difference between the people that call themselves Republicans now and say the people that were Republicans back in the 70s when Watergate came about. This is just, I studied history and I this all fascinates me. But what I see now is a Slavish cultism toward the Republican president that is Donald Trump. And I see comments, I hear comments, and I think that the reason for this is a couple of things. It's our media. We've got the one big cable company, we've got talk radio, and we've got online and the online platforms of the Trump magazines that are out there. And I'm just hearing people that basically, they sound to me like the typical Fifth Avenue crowd. In other words, if the president, Donald Trump, he said he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, his supporters would still stick with him.
Yeah, but the flip side, sorry to interrupt, Tom, but the flip side is if an anti-Trump person of profile shot someone on Fifth Avenue, then the D.C. press corps would stick with that person too, and so thus the division. I mean, the D.C. press corps has exposed itself and delegitimized itself, as have so many of our civic institutions, at not being arbiters of fair play, as being dishonest, as lacking integrity, as suffering from groupthink. And so you can understand why people see Trump willing to decide a kind of who's perceived to be on my side of the skirmish line. You can understand why they would give him wide deference where they're not going to give people who've screwed them time and again that same deference.
I know where you're coming from on that. So, again, it's I think it highlights what I'm saying. There's this huge whataboutism. Well, the media's been this, the media's been that, so here's my guy.
Right.
And he's vile and awful, and I'll stick with him. And that's just bad for our culture, bad for our society, bad for our body.
Welcome to America.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
You know, the other thing, did you watch CNN at all? Did you watch any of the newscasts last
night?
The giddiness. It was repulsive to me.
They think it's over.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? Anderson Cooper looked like all of a sudden Astroglide was covered by Obamacare. He couldn't be more excited. And you know what I mean? So that's going to reject.
How do you know about Astroglide?
I hear things.
Yeah.
I knew who Stormy Daniels was before Trump, too.
There's no question the D.C. press corps is effusive. They believe that Trump's presidency is over. Roosevelt in Midway.
Yeah, guys, good morning. Everything that you guys are saying makes sense. However, the one caveat, the one difference, the one joker in the deck is Trump. He has done himself in with his own words on Twitter accounts, on video. So that's the thing that you guys are not bringing up. And it's very, very important between now and the elections, between now and his reelection. He's going to do himself. He's been doing it all along.
Roosevelt, if you were right, we wouldn't be in this position.
Well, I don't.
If you were right.
No, not necessarily.
Yeah,
because here's another factor.
Yeah.
You guys got to consider, how does he bring the independence? That's my question to you. Thank you.
Roosevelt, thanks for the call. It's a fair point he makes, because I think Trump's Twitter feed is a bit of a roller coaster ride.
He brings the
independence. There's ups and downs.
He brings the independence through promising him faux safety. And he brings the in, and listen, I get it. I'm not knocking him. He brings him through promising some sort of a police state with liberties too, and he does it by promising him some sort of a magical economic policy that everything is going to be rosy here, and you don't have to worry about the rules of economics. That's how he does it.
I don't think so. Candace and DuPage.
That tired George Will call to back the cult. Really? Oh, the left's not a cult. Oh, please. You know, the one thing about Trump that I really admire is that the left has really shown themselves, and boy, are they scary. I mean, these people, there's no justice. You call this justice, where Mueller really, as Dan Bongino said, is totally correct. All he's doing is running cover for all the DNC crime. I mean, completely. I mean, that's what this is all about, you know, and then punishing anybody that had anything to do with them. It's a joke. The whole thing's a joke. So when somebody calls up and says, okay, or the skinny Bill Crystal that comes on at 5 o'clock now. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Candace.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy J. this morning. Somebody who's very familiar with the justice system from the same side as Michael Cohen. So we've got an expert in the studio.
You know what I find, though, sickening, and no one's talking about it? The laws governing this campaign nonsense remind me of the laws of taxation. It's a crime if I decide it is. There's 78,000 pages of nonsense that pretty much, if you just try to do anything, you're going to be handcuffed.
If President Obama fails to disclose 1,300 donors accounting for about $1.8 million, he gets a big FEC fine, $375,000. Dinesh D'Souza.
How about Rahm Emanuel with that magic trust that no one talks
about?
Well,
we're talking about federal campaign finance law. But Dinesh D'Souza, $20,000 illicit campaign contribution. It was wrong. It was a violation of the law. He gets 6 months home confinement. So there's also sort of the respective punishment. Now, Michael Cohen is facing 3 to 5 years because of varied crimes over his 20 years of being a skullduggerous individual. And the other thing that strikes me just about this before we get into the merits of it, just sort of the optics of it, a lot of backslapping, a lot of celebration on the cable news networks, of course, but by federal prosecutors and sort of the Beltway crowd. This is something that would have been solved by Buddy Ebsen and Lee Merriweather in a one-hour episode.
Yeah, Rock Hudson and McCloud, you remember?
I mean, thinly concealed financial crimes, both in the case of Manafort as well as the case of Cohen, as the prosecutors went through when they announced the plea deal with Cohen.
Today, as you heard, Michael Cohen pled guilty to 8 felony charges. 5 of those dealt with tax evasion for the years 2012 through 2016, in which he failed to report approximately $4.1 million in reported income. Approximately $2.5 of that money
was
from interest payments from a personal loan that he failed to report. Approximately $1.3 million of that money was from the operation of his taxi medallion business. Approximately $100,000 of that money was from brokerage commissions, and over $200,000 was from consulting fees. That's over $4.3 million over a five-year period, which translates into a loss to the United States Treasury of approximately $1.3 million. In addition, in count 6, Mr. Cohen pled guilty to making false statements to a financial institution in connection with an application for a home equity line of credit. In that application, he failed to disclose more than $14 million in debt.
I mean, it's just great. We'll get to 7 and 8, which are the relevant charges to Trump. But I mean, none of these are close calls. He knew he was dead to rights as soon as they pulled all of his bank records. With the taxi cab medallion business, they had his partner who had turned state's evidence. So this guy was dead to rights from the beginning. I mean, 18 months?
This is why. And I'm going to tell you another thing about that taxi cab medallion business. Give you a little back to school here. Who do you think runs that business? These taxi cab medallion businesses, where are they? Where are they? Chicago and New York. Who runs them?
Yeah.
So he was colluding and collaborating with scumbag Democrats for decades. And all of a sudden he thought in his mind, what did he think? How did he think it would turn out? They've been witness and privy to what he's been doing. You know, I know
well,
you hate a conspiracy.
Of course.
And I'm a big conspiracy guy. But
the point is, Michael Cohen is a low-level player. He was elevated because of his association with the President of the United States. That was, you know, on Trump. You lay down with Michael Cohen, you wake up with fleas, to borrow a poor Richard's almanacism. And that's exactly what's happened here. Now, counts 7 and 8 are the unlawful corporate contribution, the excessive corporate contribution. These relate to Trump. And the reason they relate to Trump is because Cohen implicated Trump in both of them. The deal with the National Enquirer American Media Company, and then, of course, the hush money payment to Stormy Daniels. In his elocution, Cohen implicates Trump in both. Trump denies that he knew anything about the Stormy Daniels payment, as he has previously.
Do you know about the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels?
Didn't know about the payment. You'll have to ask Michael Cohen. That was Trump talking to the press corps on a plane. Also, Trump reacting to Paul Manafort being convicted on 8 of 18 counts in his federal bank fraud financial crimes trial.
Paul Manafort's a good man. He was with Ronald Reagan. He was with a lot of different people over the years, and I feel very sad about that. It doesn't involve me, but I still feel, it's a very sad thing that happened. This has nothing to do with Russian collusion. This started as Russian collusion. This has absolutely nothing to do. This is a witch hunt, and it's a disgrace.
But Paul Manafort is not a good man. Paul Manafort is a longtime scumbag. And for us to wrap our arms around this guy because he's a pretend Republican, that makes us corrupt.
Well, I don't think, I don't think you have to wrap your arms around Paul Manafort. I mean, and also this again is Trump laying down with dogs, to borrow a Trumpism, What did he meet the guy in an elevator in Trump Tower, and he heard that he had done some work with respect to conventions, vote counting at conventions, so he brings him on to be his campaign chairman? I mean, remember how willy-nilly fly-by-night Trump's campaign was. When you're talking about the likes of Corey Lewandowski and Katrina Pearson having senior public roles in your presidential campaign, you're talking about not having anything approximating the A-team.
Well, this is what you tell your imaginary kids. And I tell my real kids, don't hang around with scumbags.
Right.
Because sooner or later, you're going to be a scumbag. And I'll tell you, Roger Stone, when he reared his ugly head, he's a twisted son of a gun.
Yes, he is. Stone.
And that was in 2000 when Trump threatened to run. I said to myself, why would you hang around with this lowlife? And then, you know, he went on to The Apprentice and all that stuff. So this is a shame, because had he made some good decisions. And this is also a shame when you talk about Peter Navarro and Wilbur Ross, two more scumbags as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's a totally different thing.
I understand, but I'm just saying, you hang with scumbags, you're going to be a scumbag.
You know what's interesting is compare the personnel decisions President Trump has made as President Trump when he's under public scrutiny and he's in the vice, the political vice, getting pressure from elites in society, frankly, not members of Congress, business leaders, civic leaders, the conservative base. We want to see people that are going to drain the swamp. We want to see people that are bona fide conservatives. And his personnel choices, generally speaking, I would agree with you. I wouldn't have chosen Peter Navarro, Lighthizer, or Wilbur Ross. But generally speaking, his cabinet is outstanding. More conservative, I think you could argue fairly, than any cabinet that Ronald Reagan had. Now, compare that to the personnel choices, the associations he chose when he was in private life. I mean, it's night and day. And I just think it's very interesting. I think Trump is one of these figures who is very malleable, and he conforms to the environment he's in where he believes he will be most successful. And if that means having to employ or associate with bottom feeders like Manafort and Cohen, he'll do it. And when it comes to moving policy and engendering the continued loyalty of the conservative base and being successful on his own terms as a president of the United States, then he brings in some real A players.
Yeah, I liked when he ran, and this is the part where malleable hurts me. I liked his position on military spending and nonsense in wars when he was a candidate.
Yeah,
I really did. I am so disgusted that we go day by day. Guys are in harm's way, and they're being killed and hurt and maimed. We're hiring mercenaries, and we don't talk about any of it. And it's everything I hated as a conservative when Obama was doing it. And all of a sudden, I've watched the flip. But I do think, in the end, Trump is going to win. This is a big overplay.
Well, and here's the thing. What's Cohen's play? Because this oleaginous attorney, Michael Cohen, he won't be an attorney for much longer, I suspect. Probably have to give up his law license. That will be a benefit to the legal community. Cohen cut the deal for 3 to 5, but with no requirement that he cooperate with federal prosecutors. I don't know how much more cooperation he could offer, frankly. But what about him, Cohen, trying to make a wink and a nod to Trump? I don't have to cooperate with prosecutors. I got my sentence. Now, one thing you could do to keep me silent is to pardon me. And Chuck Schumer was telegraphing a message to President Trump about any such move in the direction of Cohen or Manafort, for that matter.
I understand the president's on his way to a rally. He better not talk about pardons for Michael Cohen or Paul Manafort tonight or any time in the future.
Who are you to say anything about anything, Chuck Schumer, with that phony doll hair sewn to your head? You want to talk about a guy that makes me more sick than Roger Stone and Manafort? It's this lowlife fraud for 45 years.
You're going to make him cry.
And on the same day that all this happens, that everything goes, the Democrats are excited, Molly Tibbetts.
We'll get to Molly Tibbetts. Mike in Crown Point, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, guys. A couple quick points. First of all, this wet dream the Democrats are having, it's unconstitutional to indict a president. They know that. This can't go anywhere. Second of all, for it to go someplace, you've got to accept the word of a convicted felon who's lied multiple times.
Well, that's right.
In the past. over somebody who just says he doesn't, he can't, he never did it.
Well, that's right,
so
Mike.
There's nothing to go on.
Well, there's
my
there's,
final that... point is that I think Trump ought to just declassify everything, order all the documents declassified, and watch to see these guys run for cover.
All right, thanks for the call, Mike. So we mentioned this before, but just address it since Mike brought it up again. The criminal exposure Trump has, very limited, particularly as a sitting president, as Mike properly points out. This is about impeachment, though. This is about politics. As you mentioned, the Democrats being gleeful. This is about impeachment. This is about the political capital they've been given 80 days before the midterm election with the hopes of taking the House, maybe even pulling off some surprises in the Senate. And if they take the House in this environment, with the convictions of campaign personnel and kind of longtime associates like Michael Cohen, do they have enough to move on Trump? High crimes and misdemeanors, a presumption that he violated campaign finance law. And it goes to something Andy McCarthy wrote about the Stormy Daniels matter back in March in National Review, comparing it to Clinton's. The legal versus the political. And he talks about the political. The exposure that Trump has on the Stormy Daniels thing is legal to a limited extent, the legal and the political. The political, though, the real issue is, does this become a situation where people get exhausted with Trump and leave? And so this goes to what you're saying about how your wife reacted, who's a Trump supporter, and this energizes her more, emboldens her more to be a Trump supporter. So is that going to be the reaction, or does it become a situation where more and more of these instances that are difficult to defend, that are embarrassing, that go to sort of your worst instincts about who Trump is, cause you to kind of wipe your hands of Trump and the Republican Party by extension?
You mean the Rauner effect? And that, let's call it,
sort of.
See, we have the prime example here in Illinois. So you have a phony, fraud, pretend Republican like Rauner, who the minute he got in, he governed as if he was a Democrat. The minute he got in, he pretended to lose when he really was winning. And you knew that came through the wife with the abortion. We saw that. So to the people who know the issues, Rauner can't sell it because he's a fraud. Where Trump has delivered on the core things that he promised, and on the other things where he hasn't delivered, he has plausible deniability, such as the wall.
And he's continuing to pursue them. He's continuing to push them. He hasn't recanted. But here's what McCarthy wrote back in March. It's exhaustion. That's Trump's real porn star problem, if you will. It's one more embarrassment among many, and with each new embarrassment, a few more people tune out. A few more evangelical Christians give up. In other words, it's more likely that his future resembles Hillary's than Richard Nixon's.
Well, no matter what happens to him, can you imagine the conversation with Melania at the end of the day? I mean, no matter what you do to this guy, it's going to be better than what he's living with every day. I mean, you know, you don't want an Eastern European chick. They're not happy to begin with, let alone you throw this on the plate.
Pete in Montgomery, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
I can't believe I'm saying good morning to you, Sean.
Yeah. Say it proper.
So my concern here, overarching, is that politics has overtaken governance in all aspects of our political life. I hate to say it that way, too. But we're discussing the political optics as opposed to the governance results of either Bruce Rauner, President Trump, candidate Clinton, any of the of our you know, Mayor Emanuel. What are the results of the governance as opposed to what are the results of the political optics? And that is dangerous to our republic. And it's reflected in the Manafort trial, and now it's going to be in the Michael Cohen trial or plea deal as well. How does it affect our presidency as opposed to how does it affect our laws and the way we govern ourselves as individuals and as a society?
It would be nice
Thanks
if it
call,
neutered
Pete.
The presidency
Appreciate
the way it was intended. You realize that. with the presidency.
Yes,
to me,
the imperial presidency. Yeah, I know. I mean, Richard Neustadt wrote about that 50 years ago.
All right. Well, not everybody knows there. Montesquieu. Just talk to me for 1 minute. Jeez.
I'm just saying. Yeah, this is the modern era, from the New Deal to the Great Society forward.
So if this restrains the presidency, then we all win. It's not that big of a danger to the Republic. The danger to the Republic is if nothing pulls back the restraint on what has become an imperial presidency.
Yeah, but we're not talking about restraining the presidency, right? We're talking about ending this presidency. That's because that's what the left is talking about.
He's a stitch in time anyway.
Well, the short-term implications of removing him from office over this, what do you think those are?
Yeah. I want everybody nervous in that office. I want everybody nervous. That, you know, if you do something wrong, we're going to grab you by the back of your head and drag you in the parking lot. That's how all offices should be held.
Chris and Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Okay, I think what we're trying to do here is we're all trying to predict what's going to happen in an election based off of what happened yesterday. And what I think you need to do is go back to the beginning. The whole reason why we voted Trump in is to be a sledgehammer and go in there and just bash up this whole thing. But in the midst of that, what we've been able to witness over the course of time is we've been able to see these guys turn cannibalistic versus each other because the swamp is draining and people are being exposed. And they're overplaying their hands on the media and they're showing their true like colors of who they are. Well, now that we have that evidence, people seeing this from the outside, looking at how our government has really turned into this corrupt machine, we're now able to even get more angry and more motivated to go over there and go, you know what? This is a coup. This was a farce. This is a witch hunt. And I want to make sure that he stays in office, and I want to make sure that he stays in control to tear it completely out of our government. That's what I think.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Well, I'll tell you what, if Chris is right, then what Trump and Republicans should do straight away, starting today, November 6th is a referendum on me continuing as president. November 6th is a referendum on my impeachment.
Because you know what makes them nervous? They, unlike us, remember, he didn't win the popular vote. When you hear the recap by regular people, all of a sudden it's a landslide. He didn't win the popular vote. He won the electoral. So when you make these statements,
well, neither did Bill Clinton.
No, I understand it. But when you hear these statements of we sent him to be a hammer, well, there's not really a we. There's a few.
Well,
there's some.
Well, there's not.
There's a percentage.
It's basically 50.
Right, but he's got that other one. He's got that other 50 that have been rooted. I mean, did you see this scarecrow, this typical Oak Parker from the dirty windows down to the terrible physique? In the redhead.
Kathy Griffin
dancing in the... Did you see it?
No,
I'll show it to you during the break.
Okay, very good. And then we'll get you a copy of Presidential Power by Neustadt, The Imperial Presidency by Art Schlesinger Jr. Yeah. You'll file book reports tomorrow by 9 a.m.
Yeah, let me know.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy this morning, and I just want to thank Dan Curry for tweeting out about David Haw, another one of these liberal simps in the sports press corps that so wants to be in the liberal D.C. press corps.
That's the kid with the Manson stare, right?
David Haw?
Yeah.
He has a Manson stare?
Oh, he looks like Manson with a hair, though.
So anyway, on the score, okay, fine. I'll concede your point. On the score, Cubs trade for Daniel Murphy. Controversial but consistent for a team that puts money first. You know why he's controversial, Daniel Murphy?
No.
The Cubs just acquired for their pennant run?
No, I don't pay attention to men in costumes.
Because he's Christian.
Oh, sure. Well, that'll do it.
And so the score reporting that David Haw, you know, they throw him on the Tribune too. And just want you to know how anti-Christian the Chicago press corps is, how much they despise Christians, just like the D.C. press corps does. Just like the establishment does. Frankly, just like the Ronald Republican Party in this state does, too. So be on notice.
Maybe if he wears a Che Guevara shirt, they'll like him again.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And in for Amy this morning, a similarly statuesque blonde, Sean from Elmwood Park. Authorities in Iowa announced yesterday they have a suspect in custody in the murder of Molly Tibbetts, that young woman who disappeared about a month ago.
Was he a Mennonite?
Whose body was found yesterday. Not a Mennonite. Do we have the audio from the police announcing the arrest?
A first-degree murder charge was filed today in connection with the disappearance of Molly Tibbetts, who was last seen jogging in Brooklyn, Iowa, on July 18, 2018. A complaint and affidavit names Christian Bahina Rivera, age 24, who resides in rural Poweshiek County, and he has been charged with murder in the first degree. Dozens of law enforcement officials from local, state, and federal agencies were involved in the investigation after the disappearance of Molly Tibbetts. A body was discovered early this morning in a farm field southeast of Brooklyn, Iowa. The identity has not been confirmed. However, we believe it to be the body of Molly Tibbetts. A complaint and affidavit, which will be provided to you, will provide the details and of allegations against Mr. Rivera. Charges were filed in the Poweshiek County District Court. The case will be prosecuted by the Iowa Attorney General's Area Prosecution Division, and first-degree murder carries a penalty of life without the possibility of parole.
That was a press conference yesterday afternoon. What was not said is that Mr. Rivera is being held on an immigration detainer, meaning he's in this country illegally. He's an undocumented immigrant, that's been reported, and who had been living in the United States for some 4 to 7 years, according to the county sheriff's office. Kate Steinle Redux, a violent criminal. I don't know his criminal history, but he's now a violent criminal, or at least suspected of being one, as he's been charged with first-degree murder, who shouldn't have been in this country. The stories that we tell, and we tell stories to underscore the data that corroborates the failure of the United States to take seriously its border security, the failure of politicians in both parties to abide their rhetoric to expel, deport people in this country who are violent criminals, and we know it. And now we have another case where a young woman is needlessly murdered because she went for a jog in Iowa, and had, you know, no idea that Mr. Rivera allegedly was lying in wait.
So this fries me on two points, two levels. Number one, I have a daughter that's only a couple of years younger than this girl. And when you look at this beautiful girl and you realize she's just a kid. And this, the other part that fries me is not only do we have politicians on both, in both parties here in Illinois, that completely agree with sanctuary state and city status. On both sides, completely agree with it. You cannot find a Democrat or a moderate Republican, for that matter, that can be intellectually honest enough for just a moment to realize, had the law that the Democrats passed, called Simpson and Mazzoli, had that law been enforced, this girl would be alive. Just like the girl earlier in Easter 2017, Tiffany Thrasher from Schaumburg.
Yes.
Just like the mindless crimes and all.
Denny McCann in the South Side. I mean, here's the thing. The way this is treated and covered by the D.C. press corps and their local outposts, like in Chicago, is the same way the Chicago press corps covers the street violence on the south and west sides of the city. Nothing we can do.
Yeah.
Nothing we can do. Meanwhile, they're cheerleaders for sanctuary city and sanctuary state policies, both nationally and locally. Meanwhile, if you talk about border security, you're labeled a xenophobe and a racist. You want to keep good people out. We are not, I mean, this is just the bottom line on it, because I'm much more pro legal immigration than most conservatives, most of the Republican Party now.
Me too. I'm pro free market. I want a system that just identifies and keeps out bad people. I want everybody else in.
But let me tell you this, despite where I'm coming from, you speak for yourself. We will never get to a place where there are the amount of legal immigration opportunities I think there should be, or many on the left think there should be. I'm not open borders, but many on the left think there should be. we're blowing the caps on H-1B visas and people want to come over and make a better life for themselves and they get checked out, fine. Expediting that process, temporary worker programs, shortening the time to become a citizen. I'm all for having that conversation. I'll never have that conversation. I refuse to have that conversation if we are not going to do that concurrently with reliable border security. In fact, I'm so disgusted about these senseless murders and rapes and other violent crimes committed against American citizens. Oh, and by the way, other people here who are here illegally but are otherwise law-abiding that the left waves off because they're not useful to the story they want to tell. I'm so sick of it. I'm not willing to have the conversation about anything regarding legal immigration opportunities, even concurrently anymore, until politicians in both parties are held accountable to do the one thing that they agreed that needs to be done, the primary purpose of government, physical security of your constituents, then I'm not willing to talk about anything else.
You know what's funny, too, Dan? I'm from Melrose Park. In the 70s, I watched as this problem became so part of our fabric that we have a hard time pulling it apart with both the conflicting rules. I saw as rules were enacted for people who were administrators in school, it started to be illegal for them to ask, are you a citizen and can you prove it? For landlords to ask potential tenants, are you a citizen and can you prove it? It became, there were conflicting laws created to be used as weapons against people who had supposed private property or concerns to ask these important questions that could have stopped and deterred illegal immigrants from becoming part of our just system that where you can't separate it anymore. So I've watched the diabolical nature of government on one hand pretend to solve a problem and on the other hand create many, many more. So it's really a system where they're benefiting from the problem being there.
Yeah, and why don't you talk to, Bruce Rauner never, despite the promise, never talked to the families of victims of illegal immigrants.
Well, his workshop only has one door.
I mean, before he signed sanctuary state, President Trump at least has profiled these families like the McCann family, families like Jeannie Brady from Mahomet in central Illinois, who was killed on the evening of January 1 a couple of years ago, driving home from being a bartender at a local Legion Hall, killed by somebody who shouldn't be here, who then fled the scene and apparently fled the country, never held accountable. Denny McCann's killer, never held accountable. Flee the country, they come back. Kate Steinle's killer, right? Even as accidental as it was, recklessly accidental, but nonetheless, back and forth in and out of this country. The stories about the number of times people come back and forth despite having been convicted of crimes, the number of people released having committed violent crimes. Ted Cruz had that famous exchange with then ICE director Saldana during the Obama administration, testifying before his committee, talking about the numbers in the thousands, tens of thousands of known convicted criminals from DUI up who were released. And the excuses, their country of origin won't take them. Oh, really? Well, we're going to force it down the throat of that country of origin. Honduras won't take this criminal back. Well, Honduras is going to take this criminal back. We'll force it down the throat of Honduras. Are we the United States of America or not? We're going to tolerate. We're going to be the nation or the world's toilet for violent criminals because their nations won't take them back. How is that a legitimate excuse from the political class?
And this scoundrel, this scumbag, lowlife that killed this girl is 24 years old himself. He'll spend 70 years living like Richard Speck with a miniskirt and implants like he was in hedonism. The whole system is outrageous to me. The fact, turn him over to her father, and I'll go over and we'll help.
And that's
what we should do.
And by the way, this is not saying all illegal immigrants are like this. Let's say it is a fraction. You know, this is like talking about Islamist extremism, Islamofascism. Fine, let's say it's a fraction. Let's say it's infinitesimal.
I know it is. It is. Well, the majority of these people are good people. I understand that.
So, right. So what's 1% of 1.5 billion Muslims?
It's this girl dead. Here's what it equals. This girl's dead.
1% of 1.5 billion Muslims is 15 million. So are 1% of Muslims the world over Islamofascists? I think it's fairly clear that they are, that at that small percentage, probably a little bit above that. But let's just say it's 1%. Take a lower percentage. You're still talking about millions, which is why this is not an anti-Muslim state. This is why people coming to this country from nations that are incubators of Islamofascism, they need to be checked out. We need to know who they are. We need to know why they're coming. Simple as that. Same thing applies here. Of the 12 to 20 million persons in this country illegally, is it 1% that are violent criminals? Is it 0.5%? That's still a big number, which is why people need to be checked out. We need to know who they are. We need to know why they're coming to this country. And then if they're not here legitimately, then particularly and starting with, and if they have done anything in addition to coming here illegally, they're gone.
But you're talking about the individuality of the situation, and that's one thing that totalitarians never want to focus on. Let's not focus on individuals, just the virtue of the mass.
Bruce in Bloomingdale.
You know, I just read that the employer of this guy is some muckety-mucket local Republican politics in Iowa who claims this guy went through the E-Verify system. So ding, 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 we got a problem with E-Verify. How about cross-referencing Social Security numbers? How about doing a few other things? And as far as these countries that won't take these people back, start revoking visas. Start with student visas.
That's right.
Give them a week to get out. And then you go after the diplomatic visas. Then you start canceling trade agreements. Force them back down these people's throats. We are not the world's toilet. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Thanks for the call, Bruce. Good ideas. That's exactly right. That's, you know, flexing America's muscles a little bit on the topic, showing we're serious. It'd be a nice change of pace. Dennis and Crystal Lake.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Sean, I got a daughter also about that age. And keep it down with the foreplay with the hedonism. I'm getting a little excited. But anyways.
Well, that's a Dennis and Crystal Lake problem. Everybody else knew what I meant, but go ahead.
I know. Hey, I lived in 26 countries. And I'm telling you, not one of those countries would take anybody of that ilk. Or you can't just walk into these other countries. I mean, why is it yet we can do it in the United States, but these little countries like Pakistan can keep these morons out?
Well, we're supposed to stand for a refuge of people who are under tyranny. So on one level, I understand your point. And we have a system that should be able to, all I want.
Of course, political asylum, yes,
just
right.
Just keep out the people who would be a danger. Now, it's never going to be perfect. Perfect is not for this world.
Yes.
But a system that we have.
No, no.
But a system that we have that makes companies criminals if they don't want to hire unions, if they don't want to pay minimum wage. A system that almost forces companies into alternatives, that's the system that's at fault more than the company itself. Now, I'm not running cover for these companies that hire illegals. But what I am doing is let's focus on the acorn of the problem.
Well, if we could get to eject violent criminals, deport violent criminals, then we can have a conversation about all this mm-hmm. other stuff. But I just go back again to say, until you show me you're serious about this, how would I and why would I believe that you're serious about anything else?
Well, that's why you weren't good at playing doctor when you were a kid. See, I went first.
Zach and Downers Grove.
Yeah, first off, Sean, I love the hit from the fire talk you always provide. It's always a good show. But most importantly, you know, these guys are not protected by the Sixth Amendment. They're over here killing people, lock them up, and keep them away. When we go to Mexico and commit a crime, they can keep us in jail for months.
Okay, thanks for the call, Zach.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And in for Amy this morning, Sean from Elmwood Park. And out yesterday, a NBC Marist poll on the governor's race in Illinois
How's it look?
Finds Pritzker 46-30 plus 16 on Rahner. That really has not moved since I surveyed the governor's race right after, the week after the March primary. So all of the millions that both sides have spent over the last 5 months haven't moved the needle at all. It's in stasis. Rahner can't eclipse 30%. And interestingly, I don't know how to break this to the surrender Rahner Republican Party, the bipartisan combine types, the enemies inside the perimeter who've lorded over the party for the last 40 years doing the bidding of Chicago Democrats. I don't know how to break it to them.
Fat guys with golf tans?
The champagne socialists and the C-suites that finance both sides, but really are effectively advance the big government and government-centric view of an approach to Illinois governance. I don't know how to tell them this. The anti-Christian, anti-conservative country club Republicans can't be a social conservative. Got to be a big government Republican to get elected in Illinois. I don't know how to break it to him, Sean.
They're going to have to mop the floor of their ghetto gaming casinos?
Among moderates, self-identified moderates, Pritzker's plus 25.
Ooh.
Among independents, he's plus 18. All of that great surrendering on taxes and immigration policy and abortion and junk science and gender, and yet minus 25 among moderates does Bruce Rahner find himself, minus 18 among independents. I guess it turns out when you stand for nothing, you get no one. I guess it turns out that when you surrender, when you betray, everyone leaves.
And here's the other thing. Rahner is supposedly this genius businessman with all the answers.
Yeah.
He's running against a guy who doesn't have an alarm clock, a trust fund baby, who's never
toilet.
Done anything.
He doesn't even have toilets in his house.
Not only hasn't he done anything in business, what he has done is just take advantage of the political corruption, this Democrat cabal of just bad things, his entire existence. They have FBI clips where he's pretty much saying, I'll give you money if you give me an office, and it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Rahner's coming in third. I've upped my ante.
No, I don't think so. But the good news is that he and Rahm are going to have a lot more time to spend at their wine club together after the spring.
Laurel and Hardy.
Which is nice. Maybe Rahm comes and moves in. He and Amy Ruhl come and move in with the Rahners in the Amalfi Coast.
Ooh. Too many unattractive people in one house.
Well, it'd be tough on the Italians, that's for sure. Rahner also has done his best, just, you know, in contrast to governors like Scott Walker, done his best to prop up Obamacare in Illinois. And there's an opportunity for him to continue doing the bidding of the other side that despises him, ironically. Oh, and that he finances, you know, because they're big Planned Parenthood donors. House Bill 2624, introduced by Representative Laura Fine, who's another socialist.
Larry's sister?
Larry Fine?
Yeah.
Who's Larry Fine?
Larry Fine, the Three Stooges. What kind of kid were you? Go ahead.
Laura Fine, socialist stooge on the North Shore. this legislation, HB 2624, would limit the duration of short-term health insurance plans to 181 days. Now, remember, Trump has extended short-term health insurance. The reason they're trying to limit short-term health insurance is to ensure that healthier people do not enroll in short-term health insurance plans that will be able to last up to 36 months without new underwriting, thus preserving the Illinois Obamacare exchange. So this is a way to prop up Obamacare by herding people, you know, into the backdoor government takeover of health insurance in this country. For more on this topic and giving us a little bit of an Obamacare update, maybe this should be more of a midterm election issue than it's been to date. We're pleased to be joined by our friend C.S. Tucker, the founder and principal broker for healthinsurancementors.com. C.S. Tucker, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, gentlemen.
So just starting locally before we get your global perspective, what about this legislation pending in Springfield that would limit short-term health insurance plans to 181 days? It's on the governor's desk. Should he veto it? And why or why not?
Yes, he should. I hope he does. In fact, I hope everyone listening who's self-employed, who does not qualify for Obamacare subsidies, which is about 7 to 9 million people, many of them self-employed here in Illinois, call his office in Chicago at 312-814-2121.
How's that at the
Springfield? Springfield at 217-782-0244, or email him at gov.goca@illinois.gov. to tell him to veto HB 2624. And here's why. We have been waiting almost a full year for President Trump's executive order, which he signed back on October 17th of last year, to restore non-ACA qualified, non-Obamacare qualified short-term health insurance plans to a period of 364 days with one deductible. So there were millions of people who were using these plans to escape from Obamacare. And I'm not talking about people who need coverage for serious medical conditions, because you cannot dabble in the non-Obamacare market if you do have serious medical conditions. But many people are relatively healthy, and many of them do not qualify for subsidies. So their cost for individual health insurance has increased more than 200%.
You're talking about me, Stephen. You're talking about me. This is my reality.
Yes. Yes, although Sean is a proud scofflaw.
I am.
Which is great.
Yes, thank you.
So, but for those who are also scofflaws, this is a way for them to escape from Obamacare whilst keeping their family insured. Granted, these policies don't cover maternity. They do not cover pre-existing conditions. They don't cover mental health parity or drug rehab therapy. But if you do not need those things, the cost of these health insurance plans are a third of what Obamacare costs without a subsidy. Currently, thanks to Barack Obama's, one of the last orders that he made before he left the Oval Office was to limit these plans to a maximum period of policy ownership of 90 days. And so it hurt a lot of people because they were buying these policies that lasted all year. And if they bought them January 1st, by April 1st, the coverage would end. And they'd have to answer health questions again in order to qualify, which is great if you're perfectly healthy, but what if you're not? So a lot of people were left uninsured for the whole year of 2017 because they had to wait until Obamacare open enrollment begins at the end of the year to get coverage again. So President Trump said, enough of that. We're going to eliminate the 90-day limitation and restore these policies to 364 days of consistent coverage with no lapse and with one deductible. And everybody cheered, except, of course, for the cerebral giants in Springfield, who now want to stop that from happening. And there's one man who can veto that stop, and that is Governor Rauner. So please call his office.
I'd like to think that's going to matter. But here's my issue with this. I told you when you and I talked before that I was a scofflaw. I didn't tell you that the person that I asked to cancel my insurance was my wife, who deemed it upon herself to continue to pay. So since it's been passed, I've been ground out to where I am now paying over $2,000 a month. Now, this is me. When, you know, I don't go to the doctor. I don't want to go to the doctor. I'm proud that I'll probably die in a traffic fight. I'm not interested in offsetting costs for nonsense. That's just me, and I like the freedom of to be able to do that. But one thing that I found disheartening was that after the payoffs to the quasi-government companies we call insurance companies, we found out they were going through the back door, which was a real cornerstone of Obamacare, was to pay these, subsidize these companies. And Trump identified that. Why is that still going on? I don't understand.
Unfortunately, it is a part of the actual law, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. There's something called risk corridor payments, where health insurers who do not take as much risk make payments to Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and CMS takes those payments and redistributes them to carriers that take more risk. So it's a way of keeping the cost down for everybody. And the president actually put a stop to that, was going to put a stop to it in early July, because there was a lawsuit that stated that the way that they calculate the risk corridor payments was incorrect. So then, of course, the left went crazy and said he's trying to sabotage Obamacare, et cetera, et cetera. But then, of course, once they realized that those adjustments were made by CMS Director Seema Verma so that they were actually correct, they released $10.4 billion of these payments to the health insurers. So this is why we're going to see, first time in 6 years, this annual open enrollment period, premium increases will be smaller than they ever have been. That's also partially because they have cranked up the premiums 200% in the last 5-6 years. So there's not much left to really raise premiums on. They've already hit us so hard.
There's another story out of the Washington Examiner. Half a dozen states that have won federal approval to create their own reinsurance programs to lower premiums. Yeah. Maryland being the most recent includes Minnesota, Alaska, Wisconsin, Oregon, and Maine. This is a way for the states ostensibly to reduce premium increases by covering the highest medical claims from insurers on Obamacare's insurance exchanges. Is this a smart approach at the state level to dealing with the implications of Obamacare?
It is. In fact, it's what we did long before anyone ever heard of Barack Obama. We had state high-risk health insurance pools in 45 states in this nation. So in Illinois, for example, I've been doing this 22 years in the individual health insurance market, small group market. I've never been unable to offer someone health insurance, no matter how sick they were. Because as soon as they were denied from a carrier in Illinois, in the individual health insurance market, they would simply go to our iChip program, which was administered by our state. It was it was money that was charged to health insurers. A percentage of their profits were put into this pool, as well as state taxpayer dollars. And that pool of money was used for people who were uninsurable. So they would simply get a Blue Cross health insurance card, just like everybody else who didn't have serious pre-existing conditions, and they would be covered. So these examples existed long before Obamacare, and that's what we want to try and bring ourselves back to, is state-run high-risk pools where you separate those with the largest claims so that their claim experience does not negatively affect the premiums of everyone else. And what Obamacare did was put everybody into the same pool, which, of course, drove up premiums for those who were not sick by more than 200%.
He is C.S. Tucker, founder and principal broker for healthinsurancementors.com. There's nobody more knowledgeable about the health insurance market and the Obamacare gambit and all of its implications for much of the last decade than C.S. Tucker. C.S., thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen.
And he joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Hey, get that smartphone away from your face, Sean. You don't know where that smartphone's been.
I do. I know exactly where it's been.
Researchers finding the average smartphone screen more than three times dirtier than a toilet seat. First of all, who would come up with this idea for a study? But okay. More than one-third of people have never cleaned their phone with wipes or cleaning fluid or a similar product, according to research carried by insurancetogo.com. I'm in that one-third.
Are they covered by my Obamacare? This is why Obamacare is so high. We're trying to, you know, put these scumbags in with good people.
Did you see these pictures? Look at the pictures of the wipes of these smartphones.
Oh, my
this,
God.
It's like those smoking commercials. I mean, it really is enough to turn you off of
it's like the door at Walmart.
Using your smartphone. Yeah. Researchers put the germs in growing conditions so they would become visible. And so you can see the gunk on your smartphone as conducted by the research. They measured the number of viable bacteria and fungal cells in each sample to compare your smartphone to your toilet seat.
Man, oh, man. I just want to buy an island. If it wasn't for Obamacare, we could buy an island. I could just live there. Put my face on the money. All my problems would be solved.
But, I mean, without your smartphone, how can you sext?
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy, and the Cohen plea and allocution may reshuffle the deck on the midterms, but up until yesterday, it was interesting watching what was happening on both sides. Talking about the Democrat side, for example, Heidi Heitkamp, she's a vulnerable senator, Dem senator incumbent in North Dakota, perhaps the most vulnerable Dem incumbent. She's down 4-6 to her Republican challenger, the congressman from North Dakota. Listen to this ad. Now, this is somebody, by the way, who has not been a conservative Democrat. I think her ACU rating, American Conservative Union rating, is like 11%. But listen to what she's doing as a candidate trying to hold her seat.
I'm Heidi Heitkamp, and when I ran for the Senate 6 years ago, I said I wouldn't vote the party line, because I don't think either party has all the right answers. That's why I voted over half the time with President Trump, and that made a lot of people in Washington mad. But when I agree with him, I vote with him. And if his policies hurt North Dakota, he knows I'll speak up. I approve this message because I'm not going to be a rubber stamp for anybody.
Yeah.
I only answer to you.
I've noticed that Donald Trump won North Dakota by 35 points.
Yeah.
And that
I'm a chameleon of virtue.
Exactly. So there's Heitkamp. And now on the other side, too, so that sort of at odds with her party by necessity, Joe Manchin in West Virginia.
Oh, I love this guy.
Elizabeth Warren sets up the RNC to pop Joe Manchin. Elizabeth Warren comes out yesterday with her big anti-corruption plank in the Warren 2020 platform, even though she of course, says she's not running for president. This is a week after she introduced her nationalize all private property, a save capitalism plan. But listen, so she goes after, you know, the secret empire stuff. She goes after the lobbyist, as Elizabeth Warren, one of the standard bearing socialists of the Democrat Party. And she sets up Joe Manchin for a hammering in advance of Trump's visit to West Virginia yesterday.
How did Washington Joe get so filthy rich as a public servant and afford a massive luxury yacht? Manchin set up a coal brokering company and quietly handed it off to his son. Now Washington Joe's on Senate subcommittees, overseeing the Manchin family business. A clear conflict of interest. How's that working out for Joe? Manchin's made over $5 million in profits since being in the Senate. No wonder he's dancing. NRSC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
NRSC, I should say, not RNC, the Senate committee. But the point is, if people around Trump could stop getting convicted of felonies.
Yeah, we could focus on this stuff.
This is going pretty well. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by Stephen Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, CNN chief economist. Steve, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. So the Accountable Capitalism Act, Elizabeth Warren introduced last week, accountable to the government, of course, to oversee the assets and productivity of private business. Elizabeth Warren putting a marker down for the modern day Democrat Party last week.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is how many people in the Democratic Party support this nonsense. I mean, the party has moved far, far, far to the left. Elizabeth Warren is the standard bearer. By the way, if I were running the Trump campaign and I could handpick any person in the entire United States I would want Donald Trump to run against, it would be Elizabeth Warren. Just as in 2012, I think Hillary was probably the ideal candidate to run against. But I will say this, I think that the Heitkamp thing is interesting because she did run. I remember when she first ran for Senate, she did run as a kind of this moderate independent Democrat. She wasn't going to run, you know, for all the, you know, with Chuck Schumer and other leading Democrats. And yet, if you look at her voting record, I mean, there were two big votes that happened in the last couple of years that really define Democrats. The first was the tax cut. And Heidi Heitkamp, as well as every single Democrat in the House and Senate, voted against the tax cut, which is pathetic. I mean, where is the pro-growth wing of the Democratic Party? The other, of course, was the Obamacare vote. She was one of all Democrats who voted to preserve Obamacare, and Obamacare has been a disaster for states like North Dakota. I don't know if this show reaches North Dakota, but I hope North Dakotans aren't duped by this idea that somehow she's an independent. Same thing holds with Manchin, by the way. Yeah. Manchin voted against the tax cut, and he voted for Obamacare. What else do you need to know?
This program reaches a lot of Illinoisans who are moving to North Dakota.
Yeah.
So they're soon-to-be North Dakota voters.
Exactly.
So now, Stephen, I got to tell you, buddy, I'm one of those dwindling, old-fashioned, principled capitalists. I mean, I understand there's seven of us left. We could all be transported in a minivan. But I want to ask you something, and I mean this because this is infuriating. This Joe Manchin's kid, Hunter Biden, you know, the brother, he was after the brother's wife. That wasn't the most atrocious thing this guy did to me. It's that he partners up with the Chinese communists through Kerry's stepson, and they form Rosemont Capital. All of this, it's just overwhelming to the average guy, right? And then you find out it's our guys too. Whether it's old lady face Mitch McConnell, all of a sudden the wife shipping mogul family. It's just, is there ever going to be an instance where we can look at a guy like that congressman who happened to be a Republican in New York 2 weeks ago, got busted for insider trading, and we say from a principled place, this is corporatism, this is wrong? Or is it always going to be the lower denominator, our guy, our scumbag's cleaner than your scumbag?
Well, it sounds like you're making a pitch for could it be draining the swamp? And by the way, the swamp is growing in Washington. I mean, this is one of the few things I'm really embarrassed about under the Trump administration is that, you know, it's a wonderful thing when I go around the country and I, you know, whether I go from Portland, Maine or Portland, Oregon. All I see in major cities is cranes going up, new factories, new apartment buildings. We're in the midst of the biggest construction boom in American history. But I don't know if you've watched a Washington Nationals game lately, but the next time you're flicking the channel and you see a Washington Nationals game when they're playing at home, look at the background. There's like 8 gigantic cranes of new buildings going up in Washington. We are not draining the swamp. Washington's still getting rich at the expense of the rest of us. It's probably the second or third fastest growing town in America today, and that just shows when you all in Chicago and around the country send $4 trillion to us every year, we keep 10% of it, and that's a lot of money, and then we send the rest of you back. I never could understand the logic of why people want to send their money to Washington. It disappears here, and it doesn't come back to the people in the state.
Well, in Illinois, it's more like 20% they keep. But here's the thing. It's also the swamp is not being drained because you still have a Republican Party and leaders of the Republican Party that won't give up their dalliance with big government. Marco Rubio, his bill to allow Americans to collect Social Security benefits to take time off from work after having or adopting a child. So backdoor government financing of family leave.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, look, we're still running trillion-dollar deficits, and we're spending record amounts of money in Washington, even with Trump in the White House and a Republican Congress. The spending bill they passed, the so-called omnibus spending bill, was a disgrace. It was a total disgrace. I mean, it wasn't anything better than the Democrats would have passed. Well, the Republicans want to spend more money on the military. The Democrats want to spend more money on social programs. So they ended up spending more money on both. And look, I'm for a strong national defense. I'm a Reagan guy. But we're spending $700 billion a year on our military. And when you want to talk about waste in government, there is no agency in government that is more wasteful than the Pentagon. I mean, the Pentagon, I live 3 miles away from the Pentagon. It's the biggest bureaucracy in America.
I love when Stephen talks like this. I love when you talk like this. I've been waiting for this, Stephen. Come on, baby. Keep it up.
Well, look, I mean, whatever happened to the penny plan? Cut one penny of spending from every program for 5 years and just do it. Instead, we're increasing spending by 10 pennies on every program. And, the compound interest of that is leading to these trillion-dollar deficits. Now, we've got a booming economy right now. Trump deserves a lot of credit for that. But we are not shrinking government, and that's what we believe in as conservatives. Now, people like Heidi Heitkamp and Manchin and Donnelly and these Democrats who are running as faux, fiscal conservatives, they're just as responsible.
Do you see that as potentially changing if Republicans were to escape the midterms, still in control of both chambers? You're going to have a leadership change in the House. Maybe it becomes somebody from the Freedom Caucus like Jim Jordan, maybe. And do you think there's any appetite among Republicans writ large, not just President Trump, but Republicans in the House and Senate too, to try to tackle the runaway federal spending?
Not if they win. If they win, I don't think they're going to change. But if they lose, I think, that somebody like Jim Jordan could be the minority leader. And incidentally, I mean, I'm going to say something that's blasphemous to some of your listeners, but I don't think it would be such a horrible thing if the Republicans lost the House. Not because I want Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker. I mean, obviously, she's a lunatic. But maybe the Republicans need a little spanking from the voters in 2018. And better for the spanking to happen in 2018 than 2020.
The problem, though, of course, is that particularly in light of what's happened in the last 24 hours, I mean, there's a lot of incentive for House Democrats to move impeachment if they do take the House.
Okay, let them do it. Let them do it.
Okay.
If you want to guarantee the reelection of Donald Trump, let the Democrats look, impeachment is wildly unpopular with the American people, except for the Trump haters. And look, the Democrats who I talk to who are running a lot of these campaigns, they know that impeachment is a loser for them. It's a loser issue for the you're going to impeach Donald Trump because he made a payment to shut up Stormy Daniels? I mean, it's ridiculous. And incidentally, how is it that these so-called campaign finance violations
carry like 10, 20-year prison sentence? That's the most... Look, I'm not... Tom Manafort, I don't know everything that... I mean, not Manafort, the...
Michael Cohen.
Come on. I mean, so he made a... This is an illegal campaign payment, and he's just they're going to charge him with 20 years in prison?
Yeah, we
put rapists out on the street? I mean, it's ridiculous.
I say we put the guys who cheat on the campaign financing in with the rapists, and let's see what happens. That's called a win-win. But here, in Venezuela, we have an example of what inflation looks like when it stops playing hide-and-seek with protectionism. I mean, that's just the reality of it. It takes a suitcase of money to buy a chicken in Venezuela. We have been creating, six times the money since Obama was sworn in?
And the bad news is there's no chickens.
We don't have a lot of chickens. And the other thing is this. It's going to stop pretending to be a growth in a GDP soon. What happens when it does, and how do you unwind it without me eating my Boston Terrier for lunch?
Wait a minute. Here in the U.S.?
The U.S. Listen, the reality is...
he's talking about unwinding quantitative easing over the last decade.
Oh, come on. Look, show me where the inflation is in the economy right now.
That's my point.
There isn't any inflation. So we're not Venezuela. I love this headline, by the way. Venezuela is going to raise 5 zeros from their currency.
Inflation's in our spending. Inflation's in our debt. And we're protecting true, we're now entered protectionism. I'm suggesting this doesn't end well. I'm not saying, we're experiencing it right now. I'm saying the tsunami is on the horizon. How do you stop it?
Well, look, I don't know how you stop it, but if you were right, if you believe that we're going to have hyperinflation and that, a tsunami is on the horizon, then what everybody should do go out and buy a lot of gold, because that means, that if hyperinflation, what is the best hedge against inflation? It's gold. But the gold price has done nothing for 10 years. So I just don't see it out there. I don't see the commodity index has been falling in price. Businesses don't have any pricing power right now. They can't raise the prices. There's so much competition. By the way, that's why trade and technology are so important, because they hold down prices. And nobody can raise the price. You go to Walmart today, you can get damn near anything you want for 99 cents. I mean, I just don't see the inflation out there. We are not Venezuela.
Yes, Stephen Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, chief economist for CNN. Steve, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Have a great week, guys. Bye.
Thank you. And you joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Sean from Elmwood Park and the cable news channels, the D.C. press corps, and the Democrat socialists got what they wanted yesterday. They got their Watergate narrative, the first substantive bullet point they can use to support the Watergate redux story they want to tell in advance of the midterms 80 days away. This is the president as an unindicted co-conspirator in a federal felony, perhaps investigation. We'll see what the FEC does. Nick Ackerman, Watergate prosecutor, on yesterday reacting to the Cohen plea agreement and his allocution.
This makes the president of the United States an unindicted co-conspirator. This is the first time this has happened since Richard Nixon was named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Watergate trial.
Yeah.
This is a big
deal. I will say,
deal.
I don't tend to disagree with you much, but you are actually wrong, because Rudy Giuliani has just released a statement that counters exactly what you're saying. It says there is no allegation of any wrongdoing against the president in the government's charges against Michael Cohen. It is clear that, as the prosecutor noted, Mr. Cohen's actions reflect a pattern of lies and dishonesty over a significant period of time. I don't know if you expected a different statement from Rudy
Giuliani. Not at all. This is the exact same kind of nonsense that Rudy Giuliani's been putting out for months. The fact of the matter is, if you read this indictment, he's doing it at the direction of Donald Trump. And if he's doing it at the direction of Donald Trump, there's a conspiracy. It's an agreement to commit campaign financing crimes. It's a 5-year felony. This is a serious matter.
This is a serious matter to you. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Does it generate exhaustion, Trump exhaustion for you, or is it, does it generate enthusiasm? I want to go to the polls in November to ensure that I back Trump and Republicans in so doing.
Unindicted co-conspirator is the name of Mike Madigan's boat. So what it's going to do is it's going to take people who are not party hard Democrats, and it's going to say, look at what is going on, because what precedes this is a year and a half, nearly two, of the Mueller investigation, which has proven itself to be in conjunction with the Clinton Foundation and Democrat Party scheme. We now know through their own admission by firing nearly the upper echelon of the FBI that this investigation is corrupted. So what it produces is tainted.
Do you believe Trump is telling the truth when he says, as he said yesterday on Air Force One?
Do you know about the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels?
No, I didn't know about the payment. Why did Michael Cohen make the payment? I don't know. You'll have to ask him. Do you believe President Trump?
They want it to be Clinton's. I did not have sex with that woman.
I asked a simple question.
No, I don't believe him, but I don't care. I knew he was. I knew he was. I knew he was a scoundrel before this.
Well, that's what I want to get to.
With reason.
Well, that's what I want to get to. I mean, so does it matter if the president is lying and lying in furtherance of a conspiracy to violate campaign finance laws? Michael Cohen, not much of a fixer. He's mostly neutered himself so far, but he could irreparably damage this presidency. Is he a credible witness in a court of law? No. Is he credible in terms of consistent with what a reasonable person would believe, how this went down, this $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels? Kind of. You know, when you lay down with Michael Cohen, you get up with fleas.
Yeah, and then you have the tainted campaign supposed laws. You know, listen, I'm from the neighborhood. These aren't laws. These are spears of extortion. They don't really apply to everybody. They only apply to who's not in, who steps out of place. It's like the Blagojevich phony outrage.
Well,
he didn't do anything no one else did. You just didn't like him because he was going to spill the beans on Obama.
Well, it's fine.
To me.
It's fine. I just want to understand, though, you know, let's just be honest about what we believe happened, and then argue about what should be the legal implications and what we would like to see the political implications be. But I don't want to pretend that I think Trump didn't know about the payments to shut up Stormy Daniels and the other one.
Of course he knew. Of course he knew.
Okay.
That's what you do. You pay off prostitutes. That's what they are.
Okay.
They hold no weight.
That's why I asked the question, and I'm putting that question out to our
not
friends
me,
and listening audience.
Not me, honey. By the way, not me. Let's not get this over on me.
Right. You were speaking as an analyst.
Speaking as an analyst. I'm an analyst now, honey.
Of course. Dan in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I couldn't care less about this nonsense that Mueller's dragged up like a Russian KGB agent looking for some crime that he can find. As far as the payment, Trump said pay her by check. As far as she's concerned, she's trying to extort people for money. If anything, she should be the one in jail.
Do you believe Trump is telling you the truth that he didn't know and didn't know about the payment and what, he doesn't know why Michael Cohen made it? Do you believe him?
I do believe him.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Dan.
She's the one that should be in jail is a new one, but all right.
Well, I mean, the next case for extortion.
Listen to me. Are we pretending this wasn't who this guy was? He went to Howard Stern. He lived on this for 30 years.
Well, that's why I don't want to pretend this is not who he is. But it turns out that, you know, being who you are sometimes has you run afoul of federal law. And that's the case here. I'm not – look. I don't know why we can't be honest about these things.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's just understand what makes sense, and then we can talk about fairness, you know, equal justice before the law, you know, blind justice. We can talk about that, and we can talk about the politics of it. But I just don't want to pretend that he didn't know. And Michael Cohen, who implicates him in his elocution, has forced this conversation.
Well, would you be surprised, Dan, if all of a sudden, you know, tomorrow you wake up and there's a picture of Hillary Clinton in a leather vest and chaps at a Melissa Etheridge concert? Would you be surprised?
No, not really.
All right. There you go.
All right. Patrick in Glenview.
Good morning.
Morning.
I say it's a witch hunt still. I still say that there's no collusion. There's no Russia. It's just a... out to get Trump. I'm a Trump fan before he was even nominated. I'm more of a Trump fan every day that this goes on. I say tomorrow morning he should wake up and pardon Manafort. Fire Mueller.
In his pajamas like Arthur with the GJ.
You want him to pardon Manafort and Cohen?
Yeah, why not?
No, not Cohen. Cohen's a rat.
No, it's okay. Don't. Thanks for the call, Pat. Rats don't get pardoned, of course.
That's right. Sammy
known better.
The Bull.
Just remember, though, here the context, and this is why it creates complications for Trump, both legally and politically. Remember Rudy Giuliani on with Sean Hannity on this matter of the payment? Now, Michael Cohen just pled guilty to this $130,000 payment. That was count 8 of the 8 felonies to which he pled out, looking at 3 to 5 years. Rudy Giuliani saying to Hannity, that $130,000 payment was not hush money, was not a campaign expenditure.
Having something to do with paying some Stormy Daniels woman $130,000, I mean, which is going to turn out to be perfectly legal. That money was not campaign money. Sorry, I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know. It's not campaign money. No campaign finance violation. So
they funneled it through the law firm.
Funneled through a law firm, and the president repaid it.
Why would you be a gangster when you could be a politician or a lobbyist? Well, you don't have to win a fight. You never go, you know.
I mean, Rudy Giuliani, I don't think, as the front man for the president's legal team, has served the president well. And this turns out to be another instance. You had the incident over the weekend with Chuck Todd. What is truth? A metaphysical discussion. But this, this contradicts the plea that Cohen just made. Is Cohen a credible witness, again, in a court of law context? No. And that's why Trump's legal exposure here is limited. Okay. His political exposure, to some extent, is unlimited and contingent on how he handles it and how Trump supporters receive this. And this is why I asked the question, are you getting exhausted or are you getting excited? Ralph and Rantoul, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I don't know whether or not he knew. I'd like to think that he didn't, but I'm not that naive. The reason he's so ashamed is that when these payment amounts are revealed, it shows that he pays retail. He should always pay retail.
Trump doesn't pay retail. Damn. No American windows.
Right.
Yeah, no
American. Okay, thanks for the call, Ralph. I hadn't thought about that angle.
Trump gets a deal.
Chris on the Kennedy.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think it's entirely plausible that Trump didn't know about these specific payments ahead of time. I think it is also entirely plausible that Cohen added his name to these facts simply to reduce Cohen's liability and the sentence Cohen is going to have to agree to with prosecutors. I mean, we don't know that he was calling Trump about this stuff. And
right, we
if
don't.
He's as dedicated and as loyal, you know, he may have taken it up on his own.
And what he put
right,
to his point,
call, Chris.
What he's pleading to, look at what he's pleading guilty to.
8 felonies.
I mean, it's insane. This guy was walking around every day like a 2-bit gangster, lying to the banks, frauding, not paying back debts. His whole life was a lie. Now, all of a sudden, you're telling the truth.
Well, I know. This is why I say he's not a credible witness
in
a criminal proceeding. But, you know, you would suggest that his pleading guilty is a bit of a statement against interests. Although Chris on the Kennedy makes the point that, you know, bringing Trump into this maybe is a way of what's a couple more felonies on the pile. It's a way to limit his legal exposure and perhaps a sentence. Perhaps, maybe. I mean, it's all sordid, and it's all, you know, frankly, still the doing of Trump by who he chose to associate with and the relationship he chose to have with a bottom feeder like Cohen and, frankly, with a bottom feeder like Manafort.
Let him out. Let's see what the Russians in the velour jogging suits do. Let him out.
Well, don't forget his Russian partner in the taxi cab business turned state's evidence against Cohen, too. I mean, he was getting it six ways from Sunday, as he deserved,
it's like
frankly.
Bum fights. Go ahead.
Chris in Sycamore.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Chris.
Good morning. I want to get the facts correct, but isn't this reminiscent? The charge here is that they were playing around with the election this time around. Isn't that similar to what happened when Clinton was elected either the first time or the second time, and the allegations were that Hillary was fixing, I don't know, Jennifer Flowers or one of those? And I will hang up and listen to your historical perspective because I don't remember it all and I don't want to mislead with facts, but I thought that the charges back then were that the trial or that the election was being fixed in the background by payments similar to this.
Thanks for the call, Chris. I mean, that was never really proven. There was no prosecution, so it's a bit different. But Andy McCarthy, when he wrote about this in the spring, reminded us of the Clintons because of the comparisons made between Bill Clinton and his bimbo eruptions, as it were, and Trump. Of course, we're talking about with respect to Trump had nothing to do with him as president and abusing his executive authority. But McCarthy reminds us, you have to live through the 90s to truly have lived through the 90s to truly appreciate the number and magnitude of the scandals, Whitewater and Travelgate and Filegate and cattle futures and the bimbo eruptions I mentioned, the Lincoln bedroom for sale, perjury, obstruction of justice, allegations of rape, groping, and of course the affair with Monica Lewinsky.
And do you remember his defenders, from stand-up comedians to big movie stars? Oh, come on, it's just this, you know. And they would say, "Yeah, what's the big deal?"
Right.
They didn't care it was a young girl.
Right.
They didn't care it was an intimate. So you can justify anything in politics, anything.
Well, that's right. It's similar in some ways, and of course different how it's being treated in the same quarters that treated Bill Clinton with kid gloves and actually rallied to his defense and propagated Hillary's famous pronouncement of the vast right-wing conspiracy and so forth. But it doesn't change the substance of Trump's choices and his choices going forward. And that's the measurement by which he will rise or fall, frankly.
This is the result of a Republican Party with no standards. This is a result of just self-declaration. Oh, I'm a Republican. Oh, I'm a conservative. Well, how did you live your life? What did you stand for? That means nothing anymore. It's not 1953.
I would also say it's that's an outgrowth of a Republican Party that has been repeatedly betrayed by those who run as conservatives and govern as Democrats.
I agree.
And so you tend to take a flyer frankly, this flyer has worked out nationally so far a lot better than the flyer we took in Illinois in 16, but nonetheless, it's not without complication, and you have to confront the complications. Kevin in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. Hey, as much as this pains me to say, Sean is right, and Dan, you are wrong.
Is that right?
I know. Sean was right when he said, this is what you do. You pay off hookers and whatever concubines the president may have come along with. However, Dan, you were wrong when you said Rudy Giuliani just made it worse. Rudy Giuliani was exactly right. Mark Levin last night absolutely skewered Lanny Davis by saying he just allowed his client to do a plea deal for something that is 100% not illegal. President Trump paid back Cohen from either his own personal money or company money, not campaign money, and it was not illegal. It's never been illegal. Hell, if that was illegal, we wouldn't have anybody in Congress practically.
No.
So
yeah, that's totally wrong. That's completely wrong. Actually,
you did it now, Kevin. You see that how he gets.
What is wrong?
You cannot make a straw donation to a campaign. So if it was a campaign expense, it had to be reported. I can't donate $10,000 to Sean's campaign for United States Senate only to have my dad reimburse me the $10,000 I donated so my dad doesn't show up on the FEC disclosure forms. You can't do that. That's exactly what Dinesh D'Souza got pinched for. You cannot do that. It is absolutely a violation. In addition to that, he exceeded the contribution limits at the $130,000 level. So if Cohen is right and it was a campaign-related expense, which is plausible, then it absolutely is a violation of federal election law. Not even close.
Except it wasn't. It
not was even close.
And that doesn't change.
It was never considered a campaign-related expense.
Well, oh,
that's the difference.
Right. And he's saying it was. Cohen is saying it was a campaign-related expense, and that's what he pled guilty to. Now, Trump can argue, somebody can argue it's not a campaign-related expense, and recast the reimbursement of the $130,000. But if it's a campaign-related expense, it has to be disclosed and it has to be within the confines of the limits. So I guess it turns on that issue. So if Mark Levin doesn't believe it's a campaign-related expense, then we can debate that issue. But if it was, then those limits apply and the disclosure requirements apply as well. Thanks for the call, Kevin.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Sean from Elmwood Park. And the hits keep on coming. San Diego County Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter, a founding member of the Trump caucus, by the way. He and his wife indicted this morning on campaign finance-related charges. He calls the indictment a witch hunt of sorts. This is a district that could flip.
But his wife's involved in it. He's a little better off than having a fixer, having a Ray Donovan,
well,
Ernie Lipschitz.
I don't know about that. Ask Jesse and Sandy Jackson how much better it was when the wife is involved.
It's the worst thing that happens. She gets divorced. She comes out a winner in the end.
Right. Then the divorce follows. So I don't know that it's the greatest of positions to be in. So this against the backdrop of Michael Cohen's guilty pleas yesterday and Paul Manafort's convictions, not exactly casting Trump and the Republican Party in the best light of the last 24 hours. And here's one of the things with respect to Cohen. Let's have the conversation about equal justice before the law. Let's have the conversation about political implications and what they should be. But can we not do the suspension of disbelief thing? I mean, Donald Trump has been splashed over the pages of tabloids for 30 years, and we have people suggesting, well, he was a bit of a babe in the woods in 2016, and he didn't understand how this worked with paying hush money to porn stars, prostitutes, or aspiring models. Have you seen the 30-year record of Trump on the pages of the New York Post? Can we just not pretend that he's unsophisticated in this area and that the only difference probably most likely was the complicating factor of FEC laws? And so this is the workaround they came up with. I mean, I love Mark Levin and respect him greatly, but the idea that this was not a campaign related expense and that Trump had no idea what Michael Cohen was doing. Michael Cohen, such an incubator of clever ideas that he doesn't need any any chaperoning. I just don't buy it.
The only attorney worse in the entire world is Lanny Davis.
His representation, of course. I mean, it really is a keystone lawyer's operation.
Fun stuff.
For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Andrew Klavan, Hollywood screenwriter and essayist, author of The Great Good Thing, A Secular Jew Comes to Faith in Christ. Andrew, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's great to be here.
Well, you heard our kind of quick take on Trump and Cohen and now Duncan Hunter. What's yours after watching the histrionics from yesterday?
Well, I've always said with Trump, you know, they used to call Ronald Reagan the Teflon president because nothing stuck to him. And I call Trump the crowded Velcro president because there's so much stuck to him that nothing else can hit him. He's kind of defended by the fact that we always knew what he was, as you just said. We voted for him knowing what it was. And basically, you know, for all the pomposity and all the kind of moral preening on the left, in the last election, we were confronted with a choice between a candidate who paid off women to keep them silent, Island and Donald Trump, who paid off women to keep them silent. so we weren't exactly, it wasn't like Donald Trump was running against Abe Lincoln. He was running against Ma Barker, you know, and
right.
we knew what the choice was. And I just felt at the time, and I feel this very day, that we were given a choice between a woman who was promising, she wasn't hiding this, she was promising to gut the Second Amendment if she couldn't repeal it, and to seriously compromise the First Amendment with campaign by appointing judges who would approve campaign finance laws that basically kept us from expressing our political opinions. On the other hand, you had Donald Trump, who is what he, as you say, is what he's always been. He's a playboy billionaire. I mean, to get into the billionaire playboy club, they probably ask you, have you paid off any women, you know, to keep them silent? And if you can't check that box, you don't get into the club. We know who he was. But he has governed, unlike Barack Obama, who, by the way, was faithful to his wife, I think, and probably a pretty good father. Trump hasn't done anything outside the constitutional the norms of constitutional governance. He hasn't used the IRS to silence his opponents. He hasn't used the State Department to lie. He hasn't used the Justice Department and the FBI to spy on his opponents. He hasn't done all those things that were serious threats to the Republic. What he is a sleazy guy. You know, he's always been a sleazy guy. And I think that when you set up when you have a situation in which one side basically owns the media, which has been true, the left has owned the media for decades, and you run men like Mitt Romney, who haven't got a stain on them, and they make a big deal out of him putting women in binders or whatever, you know, awkward phrase he uses. They make a big deal about him putting his dog on his roof. Wait, the only person who can win against that is somebody whose character is so bad, you know, they can't assassinate his character because it's already committed suicide. So I think, like, you know, I'm looking at what happened. It was a bad day for Trump. I think Cohen is a sleazebag. I think Trump is a sleazy guy. But what are we faced with on the other side? I mean, this continually comes up when we're faced with people who are openly touting socialism, which is a form of slavery, which has destroyed every nation it has ever touched. When you have people who are absolutely willing to destroy the character of men like George W. Bush and Mitt Romney, who have actually had good characters, they just didn't like them. When you have another side that calls you Hitler for supporting the Constitution, that wants to appoint judges who will rewrite the Constitution from the bench, it's just hard for me to get really, really upset about the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump, and he always has been, and we voted for him knowing what he is. If the Democrats think that they're going to parlay this into some kind of impeachment thing, I think they're making a big mistake. I think after the smoke clears, they are going to realize that, you know, for the past 40 years, they've been telling the middle of America that they stink, their culture stinks, they're racist, they're sexist, they don't understand sexual mores, everything has to change, men or women, they've got it all wrong. Now that group of people has finally elected a president that they like, and they think they're going to go and depose him over a campaign finance violation. Good luck. I think that's basically where I think this comes out. I do not support Donald Trump's character. I don't support the things that he's done. But we're looking at a side that is really radicalized and is really anti-constitutional and anti the United States. And I think that those are the choices we have. We can only make the choices we're given. And I think we should, in the long term, start to work for political reform.
Now, Andrew, I concede every point you made. Literally, I do. But at a certain point, isn't this our obligation? In fact, I say our responsibility to adhere to our principles as conservatives, as capitalists, as fundamental libertarians or free market people or people who don't want that tyranny you fear of. Because what I see is I see us, former Tea Party people, be splintered off into supporting some of the very things we raged against. So I get what you're saying, and I agree with every word of it. However, I think our job the day after the election was to say, listen, you, I don't need a leader. I want a representative of these beliefs, and that we, in essence, are victim of our own failure to demand these fundamentals.
Yeah, of course you're right about this. I mean, one of the definitions of tragedy is a man being faced with two choices that are equally bad, and that's what people on our side, conservatives, have been faced with. We've been faced with the choice of either ceding our republic to a group of people who have promised, openly promised, to fundamentally transform it into something else. and supporting a man who violates, whose life has violated all our basic principles. That's a tragic choice, and we have to think about how we got here and how we can get out again, because there are always, you know, when I hear the real deep Trumpers who just make excuses for everything he does, I think, you know, there's a price to pay at the end of the day when you do that, when you get rid of your own values just to get what you want politically. And I think that, you know, we need to start talking about reform. I think the media needs to be reformed. It can't be reformed by fiat because of the First Amendment, and I think that's right. I think that's the way it should be. But I think we should be lobbying the media and saying, you know, you guys got to start hiring some people who represent the rest of us. It's no good to have three broadcast networks stacked with Democrats pushing the Democrat line. It's one of the most divisive things that's happening in this country. I truly believe that 70% of Americans agree on 70% of principles. But when you have a media relentlessly pushing Democrat policies and Democrat people while relentlessly assassinating the characters of Republicans and branding their principles as racist and sexist and the rest, that is incredibly divisive. It means we can't talk to each other. It means we can't reach out to each other.
Well,
and the other thing that needs reform is our legislature. When you have Chuck Schumer sitting there waving a pen, begging the president to make a law by fiat, instead of doing their jobs of negotiating, compromising, and facing the music at home, basically the legislature, the Congress, has become a vestigial organ of the government. And that's a really dangerous thing. That means all the power resides in the presidency, and we have to deal with these impeachment threats constantly, constant personality discussions, instead of dealing with policy and law, which is what we've been dealing with. But you're right. This is a sad choice to have to make. Right now, I stick to my guns that I want to defend the republic, even if it means supporting a guy like Trump. I still feel that's the right choice to make. But it's not pleasant, and never has been.
Well, here's the thing. Even if you're right, and others have suggested that if the Dems do move to impeach, if they were to take the House, for instance, that would be a vast overplaying of their hand, and it would boomerang on them and benefit Trump in 2020. Even if that's true, that doesn't mean that Trump is always playing 24-dimension chess, as is suggested, and it doesn't mean that he can't improve on the job. And one of the things is how he's handled this matter of Stormy Daniels, because really what we're talking about legally here is de minimis. $130,000 in the grand scheme of FEC law is not a big number. It usually is accompanied by a fine if you fail to report, even if there was some sort of willful intent to mislead. But Trump could have handled this right from the outset, because there is this technical question. We just had this discussion with a caller before you came on about whether the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels constitutes a campaign-related expenditure and an in-kind expenditure by Michael Cohen. And Trump could have said at the outset of this, once it was revealed, that our interpretation was this is not a campaign-related expense, so it is not violative of campaign finance law. That's our belief. He sort of take ownership of it and give it the back of the hand. If the FEC wants to, somebody wants to make a complaint to the FEC and they want to litigate this, then we're happy to litigate it. But that was our understanding from our advice and counsel, from our election attorney, or whatever the case may be. Instead, he ratcheted it up. Instead, he went after Cohen and Stormy Daniels and this entire prosecution the same way he's gone after the Russian collusion investigation, where no evidence has been produced. But there was evidence here. And so he turned a de minimis thing into a de maximis thing. And now this is boomeranging on him.
You know, it is funny, because you're absolutely right about this. But it is kind of funny, because one of the things we're also looking at is this kind of coup attempt by what they now call the deep state. And actually, I think that's a fair label for it. You know, this administrative state, people, unelected people who basically don't like the fact that he came in shouting at them and promising to clean them up. So on the one side, you have this completely lawless coup attempt by guys like John Brennan and James Clapper and possibly the FBI. And on the other hand, you have this guy who just sprays everything like with a machine gun and can't tell the difference between a collusion investigation that actually does seem to me to be a witch hunt and something like this that he could have said, look, you know, you knew what I was when you elected me. I haven't lived the best life. I'm here to help America. You know, if he had done that, he'd have blown him right out of the water. You're absolutely right. He is not the most strategic. You know, people say he's playing three-dimensional chess, but what he really is like is he's like a running back. He's a guy who senses daylight and runs for it. And a lot of times that works. He's been incredibly successful in everything he does. But a lot of times you run into a wall of defense. And that, I think, is he's much more running by his gut than he is by his brains. And his gut is always to attack, always be on the offensive, always strike back with everything he's got. And it doesn't always serve him well. And I think in this case, he could have blown this whole thing up just by being honest about it, because we all knew already. We know who he is.
He is Andrew Klavan, screenwriter, Hollywood screenwriter, essayist, and author of The Great Good Thing, A Secular Jew Comes to Faith in Christ. Andrew, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great talking to you. Thanks a lot.
And you join us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.